in picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's got to be reality and not illusion or delusion the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the Art's views. And Art, do you pronounce your name Olivier or Olivier? How do you pronounce your last name?
Yes, Olivier, that's correct.
Olivier, and of course, basically, Art has done a wonderful job of putting together a DVD called Operation Terror. It's actually a motion picture, but it is available on DVD. And we heard this evening, before we started our program, the news was saying there's a question now that certainly the Syrian government is using chemical weapons, and we may have to go in there, and we may have to send our troops in, because Syria is using chemical weapons against the people and against the of course, the rebels. Of course, we're financing the rebels. We're trying to overthrow the government over there. We're looking for an excuse to go to war. Why in heaven's name would Syria use chemical weapons, knowing that would give certainly the Americans and the United Nations an excuse to attack this sovereign country? Imperfect, yes, but what nation is not imperfect? I mean, certainly Syria, actually, a few years ago, you remember when we were actually capturing people, CIA was capturing them, they were sending them to Syria so they could be tortured. We sent people to Syria so they could be tortured, and we had prisons over there where we were keeping our terrorist prisoners, sending them over there to be tortured by the Syrian government. Governments throughout the world do this sort of thing, and Syria is not a perfect government at all. But right now, they're doing everything they can to convince us that, my goodness, we may have to attack Syria because they're using chemical weapons, or the terrorists might get hold of the terrorist weapons. And you must understand, they always have to have an excuse to take us into a war. And that was basically, of course, the story of what happened on September 11, 2001. They wanted an excuse to take us into a war with Afghanistan so they could go to war with Iraq. And they lied to us about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. And they lied to us about what happened on September 11, 2001. And basically, the movie that Art has put together is an excellent, excellent story and summary of what happened on September 11, 2001, a story which every American should read. And then they might be able to understand what really happened in Boston, because you have to understand, we are constantly lied to. Art, what motivated you to put together this DVD on the September 11th attack?
Well, there's been a lot of documentaries on September 11th and a lot of books that were written, but not very many people will read a book. Probably less than 1% will read a nonfiction book on their own. A few more will watch a documentary, but still only a small percentage. But most people will sit down and watch an entertaining feature film. And that's what we did. We created an entertaining feature film that is just packed full of valuable information. The whole movie is based on actual underreported events of 9/11. So it's just a way for people that understand what happened on 9/11 to be able to buy the DVD and then to be able to show it to their friends and family that really haven't done the research.
And I think it's so vitally important. I remember, of course, living through a lot of these instances. I did a lot of research, and certainly whether it was Operation Able Danger or some of the other operations that were there. I mean, basically, ladies and gentlemen, if you saw the original pictures of the Pentagon after it had been hit by this airliner, you have an opening about 18 feet high and 18 feet wide. Are we supposed to believe that a 737 went in there, the wings went in, the tail went in, the whole body of the plane went into that spot? Or that at Shanksville in Pennsylvania, the plane crashed into the ground, but there wasn't any wreckage at all. It was over an 8-mile perimeter.
Gold, silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. the U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 and the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Disaster can strike at any time. That's why Americans spend billions on insurance policies. But what about investing into disaster preparedness supplies, especially food? After Hurricane Sandy, people waited weeks for help to arrive. Be prepared for anything with Mountain House freeze-dried foods, the finest in the industry, packed in heavy-duty double-enameled number 10 cans with over 99% of the oxygen removed for the longest shelf life of any product available. And the taste, absolutely delicious. Entrees, meats, vegetables, fruits, and desserts made in the USA. Just add hot water, wait 10 minutes, and serve. Save 25% on Mountain House number 10 cans, April 2nd through the 8th, with free shipping to the lower 48 states. Visit freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. 866-404-3663. Get 25% off April 2nd through the 8th. Act today. Don't miss out.
Happening pretty fast.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Art Olivier, and he put up a lot of his own money to put together an excellent film. He had to hire actors. He had to have a script. But he has excellent filming. This is certainly a film that could show in theaters across America, but none of the major distributors will touch this film. They will certainly be afraid, actually, to put this sort of thing out. You can't let the American people understand that on September 11th, 2001, the people who were running our government conspired to create a phony incident. And, of course, I think the explanation given in the motion picture is excellent. It basically, there's oil in the Caspian Sea. They needed a pipeline across Afghanistan. The Afghans wouldn't let them put it in, so they needed an excuse, actually, to attack Afghanistan, to gain control of Afghanistan, so they could actually, of course, put a pipeline across Afghanistan so they could move the oil from the Caspian Sea down to ports in the Indian Ocean and then get it out to the world. I mean, they were talking about many billions of dollars. And basically, of course, they used the Afghan as certainly a jumping off point so they could attack Iraq, because Iraq was one of the largest producers of oil. But that was a few years later. We needed our troops there so we could facilitate the coming attack on Iraq. But the initial attack, of course, was Afghanistan, because actually 15 Saudi nationals, we were told, hijacked 4 planes using box cutters. And then they were able to fly those planes, 2 of them into the World Trade Center, 1 into Shanksville, Tennessee. So they won basically into the Pentagon. And because of that, those 15 Saudis had done this. There were 4 who were not Saudis. Instead of attacking Saudi Arabia, we attacked, of course, Afghanistan. That doesn't make sense. Well, basically, of course, Art, why don't you give us your impression of what really happened that day, why it happened, and suddenly how they were able to convince the American people that you could get a 757 and fly it into an 18-foot hole in the Pentagon.
Yeah, the as far as the Pentagon goes, we have a scene in the movie where we recreated what happened in the Emergency Operations Center underneath the White House. Now, this was the whole scene was written by Norm Mineta, the Secretary of Transportation, who was in the Emergency Operations Center with Dick Cheney, with Scooter Libby, with all the players that we show in the movie. They were all there and orchestrating the event. The vice president gave the stand down order for the missile to hit the Pentagon and to do the flyover. You know, they had a plane that flew over the building and then a missile hit it at the same time to give the illusion that the plane ran into it. And then he also gave the shoot down order to shoot the plane that exploded over Pennsylvania, which unfortunately for them, not a single part hit the field where they said the plane had crashed. But, it was the war in Afghanistan was already it was already in motion before 9/11. They were ready to do that. Their eyes were already set on Iraq when they during the Energy Task Force meetings, which were in March of 2001. Those were led by Dick Cheney, and they had a bunch of oil company executives, and they would give them all the maps and the all the companies that were doing business with Iraq at the time, and then let them know what companies could be doing business, you know, with greater influence over there. And so that was all exposed too. So the plans were already set. They just needed an excuse to do it, and that's why they created 9/11 to be able to sell it to the American people why we needed to go into Afghanistan and Iraq.
And I think it's so vitally important for people to understand that basically our minds are controlled by what we see. Now, right after the attack, I was firmly convinced that the government knew about the attack and basically, of course, it allowed it to take place, which is a criminal activity, as it were. Mm-hmm. And certainly there's so much information that is brought out here that would confirm that. But, of course, it was really much more than that. It took me a couple of years to understand that when they took down the Twin Towers, those were controlled demolitions. Basically, they have pictures there. You can actually see them, and you can see the upper stories of the South Tower simply collapsing and simply dissolving before the rest of the building begins to fall. How could that happen if this was a spontaneous collapse, a pancake-type collapse? And basically, of course, there's no question that building number 7 was a controlled demolition. They killed almost 3,000 people that day. And the American people, if they understood this, there's no statute of limitations. The people who are responsible should be arrested and tried for murder, which they should. Incidentally, the fellow that you have that plays the part of Dick Cheney, I never saw anybody who looked more like Dick Cheney other than Dick Cheney himself. Where did you find him?
Yeah, well, we go through our casting process. We probably went through about 1,000 actors, I would say, to get the 75 actors with speaking roles in the movie. I was really lucky to get our Dick Cheney. He was very, very convincing for that role.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 if you have a question. The film is called Operation Terror. Operation Terror, and it is a well worthwhile listening and watching. We watched it yesterday afternoon, my wife and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And certainly it's a high quality, well filmed. In fact, I don't know how you did that on a limited budget, but you did an excellent job. Have you done other motion pictures before this one?
No, this was the first one. I contacted Paul Cross, who's the director and also plays a role in the movie, the George Poole role. And he had done a movie that touched on 9/11. It was about a little bit about the Pentagon there. And so I thought that he would enjoy doing this one, and he did. And so he helped me through the business But a lot of the business, you know, I've been a real estate developer, and it is somewhat similar to that, where you draw up your plans, you write your script, you go and sub everything out, you know, you hire the actors, you get the locations, you know, so it's a lot like building houses too. So I have experience in that, and so we were just a lot of hard work and a lot of dedication, and we got it done.
But it's vitally important, ladies and gentlemen. You must understand, we were concerned by a few people being killed, as we were, for instance, at the Boston massacre here recently. We're talking about 3 people actually died and 175 were wounded. We're talking about over 3,000 people, or almost 3,000 people, were intentionally killed that day. Intentionally killed, this was, they were murdered. In fact, we don't even know what happened to the people in some of those buildings some of the airplanes, because there's a great deal of evidence that certainly the airplanes that actually contained the passengers didn't crash into the buildings. But what are your thoughts on that? What really did happen? I think it was which was the flight that actually landed where they took the passengers off? Do you recall?
Well, some people speculated it was 93. In the movie, we say it's 175. I think it's either one of those, because it was a United Airlines passenger jet. The media reported that it landed in the north end of Cleveland Airport and then taxied its way to the NASA hangar facility. And 200 passengers got off the plane and they went into the NASA hangar. And that's all we know.
And they were never seen again after going into the hangar. That's a
right. There's no reports of them coming out or anything like that. The NASA facility was completely evacuated before that plane had landed, as well as the Cleveland Airport. Both the airport and the adjacent NASA facility were completely evacuated. There wasn't a passenger in there at all. What they did is they said that there was another plane, which was, most people don't know this, it was a Delta flight 1989 that landed at the south end of the airport, and they said there might be a bomb on board, and that gave them the excuse to evacuate both the airport and the NASA facility so they could bring in the plane with those 200 passengers.
But people don't really understand how the system works and basically say, well, if there was anything of this magnitude, somebody would have talked. Ladies and gentlemen, nobody would have talked. Because if you talk, they will kill you. They will either put you in prison for the rest of your life or they will kill you. These are not nice people. And this is basically, we know that almost 100 people who are in one way or another associated with the assassination of Jack Kennedy back in 1963, almost over 100 people were killed. They just died under mysterious circumstances. We never talk about that. I think that now most people understand that Jack Kennedy's assassination, over half of people who were interviewed recently believe, of course, that he was killed by forces within the government. But it's exactly these same forces. This is not the government. This is an invisible government working behind the scenes that has an agenda. People of great wealth and great power who do what they are told to. And people have to understand that people like George Bush are simply puppets, just exactly as Obama. Barack Obama is simply a puppet for the people working behind the scenes. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. But this is a fascinating overview of what really happened on September 11th. Done in the form of fiction, but it's really very, very accurate. I didn't see anything there portrayed that I didn't know would actually happen. All you have to do is go up to the internet and watch Building 7 come down. Watch Building 7 come down. Came down at 5:20 in the evening, and of course, the plane, nothing hit it. Supposedly, there was a fire there in the building. So this steel-reinforced building came down because there was a fire in it. No building has ever come down because of a fire, and the same thing is true of the Twin Towers. Watch them go down, and you can see the explosions. You can see the dissolution of the upper floors. Why would the upper floors dissolve if you begin to have a pancake collapse? And, of course, we've been lied to. They murdered those people, ladies and gentlemen. Our number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Give us a call. This is a vitally important subject. We need to identify.
Hello, folks. This is Steve Day, the director of Home for Health Lifestyle Center. And over the past years, we have been blessed by witnessing folks plagued by chronic illnesses gain restoration and get back their health after coming through our live-in Christian health retreat. Today, sickness and disease is everywhere. Cancer, MS, diabetes, and chronic diseases plague us. But there is hope, and Home for Health can help. We're here to help you in your time of need, and we would encourage you to go to the Home for Health website, www.homeforhealth.net. That's www.homeforhealth.net. Or you can call us today at 888-642-9644. That's 888-642-9644. Call Home for Health today and start your healing journey now.
Home for Health, truly do all to yourself. Being free of disease is real well. Home for Health.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging. Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now 1-866-405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
The moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Art Olivier. And we're talking about his film, Operation Terror, which I saw yesterday. Fascinating, fascinating DVD. And basically, we have John calling from New York. We have another caller. And basically, if you're out there in the listening audience, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But what you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, is they murdered almost 3,000 people. I mean, certainly they murdered the people in the Twin Towers. They intended to murder a lot more, in fact, if it hadn't been for, I think it was in Morgan Stanley, where the fellow who is in charge of security for two floors there actually evacuated 2,400 people. The loudspeaker kept saying, stay at your seats. Don't get up. Just stay at your seats. Everything's all right. Don't worry. worry about the North Tower. Here in the South Tower, everything's fine. And the head of security ran up and down the aisle and said, get out, we're under attack. And he got 2,400 people out. Remember, right after the attack, they kept saying, oh, the 6,000 people died. And then it was 5,000, and then 4,000, and then 3,000. I'm sure they expected all those people to die. But, of course, they were evacuated over the objections of the people who were manipulating this whole thing. And what a criminal act this is. Mass murder of Americans in our own cities. Well, let's go to John, who's calling us from New York. Hi, John. Do you have a question or comment?
The people that disappeared in the airport off the plane, is, you know, they have the underground bases, and if someone was to subversely go to an underground base, can't tell anybody, they've got to disappear from their family. What a perfect way to die in the 9/11 exposure, and or supposedly a plane bombing up or whatever, and then all of a sudden go into their underground facilities where they're no longer expected to be here, and so... The airport must have an underground access.
We don't know, John. John, we really don't have any idea. All we know is that they disappeared in a hangar, and we never heard from since that time. Do you have any comments at all on that, Art?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, John's on to something there. And this is a possibility. We were told that those passengers were killed. And after they went into Cleveland, they could have been taken to some place like Iron Mountain or something like this, because a lot of those passengers that we used in the movie, these were people that had very high technical ability. These were people that had worked on different avionics. They may have worked on directed energy weapons. They really had a lot of technical ability, and the government could be taking those people and putting them in some underground facility and to develop other weapons. So that is a possibility.
Okay, I'm going to have to go, John, because we got something on your telephone there. Let's go to Bruce, who's calling us from Michigan. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. If you have a question, hi, Bruce, you have a question or comment? Bruce from Michigan.
I wonder if your guest had ever seen the movie Painful Truths of 9/11 by Eric Hofschmidt, plus the Dave Von Cleese movie. I think it's in plain sight.
There are a lot of excellent movies out there, Bruce, and I don't know. We'll ask Art if he's seen those. But there are a lot of excellent movies out there. Bruce, this is different. This is done essentially as a story rather than as actually. It's basically done as a story rather than as a documentary. I'm sure you've probably seen all of these other documentaries, haven't you? Or most of them.
Oh, I was kind of breaking up there, but I've seen a few of the documentaries,
And certainly I think Dave Van Cleese did an excellent job. We actually offer five DVDs, which we think are excellent, to our ministry. And they're all certainly documentaries, but this one is really done as a Hollywood story, Hollywood production. But it's how you get people to understand what happened. Most people just don't want to think about it. This is entertainment, and hopefully in the process of entertainment, they'll get to really understand the depths of the depravity of the people who murdered almost 3,000 Americans that day. Anything else, Bruce?
Yeah, well, we're talking about Hollywood movies. I watched an old Jack London biography. He was in the 1907 Russian-Japanese War. And started warning people about Japan. They must have gone 25 or 30 years warning about Japan. Like, it reminded me a lot about Iran, how people are warning about Iran. And it always seems we get involved in wars by suffering some innocent, outrageous attack upon ourselves. I wonder if you think we're building up to a war with Iran and we're going to allow them to attack us first, like with limited EMP or something like that, so that we are... innocents attacked again, even though we know all along for 30 years that they were working on something.
Well, maybe we would attack ourselves with an EMP attack and then fight with Iranian. See, you don't know. Basically, it's all conjecture. But I really appreciate your call and our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Give us a call.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden. All heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4 to 6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Youngevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid that is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Youngevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, sitting our guest is Art Olivier, and we're talking about his DVD, Operation Terror. Now, basically, it's made as a full-length film, but of course, because none of the distributors will handle this. Why? Because, of course, they can't let the American people realize what's going on. And ladies and gentlemen, there really is control over the motion picture industry, over the publishing industry, certainly over our newspapers, over certainly our radio and television. There are six major corporations that control 90 to 95% of all the major media outlets in America. This is well covered in a book we carry, written by a left-wing college professor who studied this issue for almost 30 years. The book is called The New Media Monopoly. It's available by calling 1-800-544-8927. The New Media Monopoly by Professor Ben Bagdikian. I've talked to him, and he's a very nice man. Of course, he thinks the right wing controls the media. He's a left winger. The left wing thinks the right wing controls the media. The right wing thinks the left wing controls the media. And they're both wrong. And that's, of course, the importance of the ministry we have trying to point out what's really going on behind the scenes. Well, before we go on, Art, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get the DVDs. Can we actually get them from you at wholesale and distribute them, or do you primarily the distribution yourself?
I do it myself, but I also have people that that sell them on a retail basis too. So yeah, you could sell them through your avenues.
All right. Why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you if they'd like to order one tonight?
Sure. Yeah, you just go to operationterror.com and click on the button that says order DVD.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is an excellent DVD. I will really recommend it very highly. Well, my telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 831-464-8295. That's 831-464-8295. And let's go to Dave, who's calling us from New York. Dave, are you in upstate New York?
Central New York.
Okay, fine. Well, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Has anybody considered with, I guess they painted thermite on the infrastructure of the building, the very high explosive. Anybody have any idea how many people or how long it took to actually get this plan underway as far as doing things to the structure?
Yeah, there's the actual implementation. You know, it's like doing my movie. You know, the actual production doesn't take that long. The planning, of course, does, and it takes a lot longer than the actual implementation. Susan Lindauer, she was a CIA asset. And before 9/11, they were recording a lot of these bands that were going in and out of the parking structure underneath the World Trade Center. What they did is they had a major elevator renovation throughout the building. And so that gave people access to the inner core of the building where all the columns are at. And then they had other evacuations that they had during the weekend. They're working on some electrical systems. All the electricity was out and in the entire building, so there were no video cameras that were recording during that time. I forget what she said, the time frame of those bands that were coming in and making these unscheduled deliveries. I think it was about 10 days.
Okay, fine. And, of course, there was a fellow who was in charge of security there. He was on the board of the company in charge of security. His name was Ned Bush. He was the president's brother. So we don't know, but certainly it's very strange that the president's brother would be on the board of the company that was in charge of security to make sure nothing bad happened to that build, those buildings. And basically, of course, the whole idea was with nanothermite. Of course, you can actually put it on the beams, and then, of course, you can put some sort of electrical stimulator on there, and you could certainly collapse those buildings. All of those would go down. They would just simply cut them across one after the other in sequence, and that building actually fell in about 6 or 7 seconds, sort of the speed of gravity. How could that possibly have happened if this was a pancake collapse? And why did the top of the building, and you can watch it carefully, you can watch the top of the building simply dissolve before the rest of the building begins to fall? Would that have happened? Because, of course, it was a collapse at one level. And is there any instance in all history where there's actually been a fire that has brought down a steel-reinforced building? Not one, but three? Go right ahead, Dave. Anything else you want to ask?
Yes. Can we, with things, the conditions in America, can people like yourselves that think about this, contemplate things, can we look forward to, not in a positive way, to another incident like this or worse?
What are your thoughts on that, Art?
Well, of course, there will be more instances, but like I was saying earlier, that especially the young people nowadays, young people don't watch nightly news anymore. They don't watch CNN. They're not brainwashed like people in our generation. And they get their information from social media, from their friends. And these false flags are young people just don't believe them anymore. So I think the next big false flag, they could have a problem, especially with young people. Maybe, if it's really an emotional thing like 9/11, there could be civil unrest. And of course, they're preparing for that too, unfortunately. But definitely there could be a lot of trouble because people are really opening their eyes and not believing these stories anymore.
And basically, Dave, there was a recent poll. It was done by something called Public Policy Polling. Public Policy Polling has a left-wing a group that actually contacts a lot of people to get their opinions. And there were several thousand people they contacted. I've forgotten, maybe 1,000, 1,500, something like that. But they found that actually that 28% of the people who they contacted already believed that there was some sort of a secret organization working behind the scenes, and basically, of course, manipulating things, and their goal was a one-world government. And when they broke them down, they found out 38% of the people who voted for Romney believed that. I think about 22% of the Democrats believed it. We're making tremendous, certainly, progress. People are beginning to wake up. They don't know what to do. They don't understand the spiritual forces that are behind this. There really is this conspiracy, but it is a conspiracy, in my opinion, a satanic conspiracy against mankind. And basically, it's going to result, tragically, in certainly the destruction of this country, unless the American people wake up, unless there's a great revival. But God does bring his judgment upon nations and on societies. And I really fear for my country when I reflect that God is just and his justice is not going to sleep forever. Those are Jefferson's words, but I'm going to steal them from him. Anything else you want to say, Dave?
Well, yes, I'm surprised at the unbelief of both you fellows about the plane that went into the Pentagon. The technology of the day in that plane, when it got close to something that wasn't another airplane, like a building, what it did, it went into a shrink mode, and the plane shrunk.
You think the plane actually shrunk down so it fit in that 18-foot hole?
Right, right.
Okay, fine. Well, thank you so very much, Dave.
Okay. Yeah, there are some theories that the plane had its wings pulled as it impacted the building. But yeah, I know those are. I think Dave was just being funny about that. But yeah, those are some really theories that people come up with to try to rationalize how.
Well, then the parts that disappeared, they were picked up by a UFO.
Okay, Art, do you have a comment for Dave?
No, yeah. Maybe, yeah. There's all sorts of ways people try to rationalize how that plane disappeared.
Basically, I talked to a lady who was actually in the Pentagon at that time, and she was there with her infant son. It was, I don't know,
April Gallup.
Yeah, and basically she actually came out through the hole in the side of the building. There was no records there. In the hole, there is no records in the hole that went into the Pentagon. And she was immediately contacted by men dressed in black overcoats who threatened her life if she ever told the truth about what she saw when she came out through that hole. And she's lucky to be alive today, I really believe. But we've talked to her on, at least on one occasion, and we know she's trying to bring a lawsuit to bring this out. And totally suppressed by the controlled media. Anything else, Dave, before we let you go?
Oh, thank you, gentlemen.
God bless. And I'm not going to get on one of those planes that shrinks on just before it crashes. Thanks so much. And our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 831-464-8295, 8427, 1-800-464-8, call us at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY would be the easiest thing, or 464-8295, 464-8295, locally here in the Central Coast of California. Well, basically, Art Sidney, has there been any criticism at all? Have you come under any pressure because you put out this film, which really exposes one of the greatest crimes ever committed in America?
No, not really. All my TV interviews that I get are all canceled before the interview happens, usually the day before. The host is real excited about doing an interview on the movie, and then I find out that it's canceled the day before, and so I don't get any any criticism from the television. They just simply ignore it. There was some criticism, just slight amount, from some people that have done a lot of research on the movie, and they didn't like any speculation on what had happened, you know. But in a movie, you know, you have to, what we call, fill in the hole. You just can't leave holes in the storyline, because it wouldn't make a good movie. So we have to do a little bit of speculation. And there's a few people that were bothered by that. But no, like I said, 99% of the people just really loved the movie. And
I think you, if you're out there in the listening audience, you will love this movie as well. It is an excellent analysis of what happened, and there's so many of the instances there that he talks about. And I can remember, certainly, when we were back there, and certainly in 2002, 2003, evaluating what really happened, and certainly as all the various parts of the story came together, it was very obvious that they knew who these people were. They've been following them for a long time. And basically, of course, if you have any question what happened, go up into the internet, go to Google and type in six of the 19 hijackers living and well in Middle East, something like that. 16 of 19 hijackers living in Middle East, you'll find that's true. 6 of the 19 hijackers are living and well. And if you can explain to me how they were killed that day, and then they immediately came back to life, I'll believe almost anything you tell me. Well, let's go to Mark, who's calling us from Walla Walla, Washington. Again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295 locally. 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But hi, Mark, do you have a question or comment for our guest?
Hi, yes, let's just have a quick comment. My theory is, I'm just wondering, due to the weight on the very top of the building, it looked like they had like a steel mask up there, and other things. I'm not exactly certain, but I'm wondering if the weight at the top of the building caused the building to collapse a lot quicker than let's say if they didn't have that on top of the building.
Well, the thing is that this obviously had to have explosives to bring the building down. They found the microthermite there, or the nanothermite. They found examples of it in the dust. So they used nanothermite. Had nothing to do with the fact that there was a mast on the top. What are your thoughts for Mike, who says, well, the reason it came down was the way it did was because there was a mast on the top of the building?
Oh, no, no. I mean, that was relatively lightweight compared to the rest of the building. And the way they make a building that size is the columns are much thicker and much wider in the first third of the building. And they start getting smaller and lighter as you go up higher and higher. So the columns on the base of the building are huge. I mean, some of these columns were like 5 feet long by almost 2 feet thick. And they're just really massive. And but as you get higher up there near the top of the building, then they're much lighter because they don't simply have the load as the ones on the bottom do. And so those buildings had held that load for all the years that they were there. And then on 9/11, within 10 seconds, they disappeared. It takes a tremendous amount of energy to get rid of those columns and make them, disappear or turn into dust. It was a tremendous amount of energy that they.
And of course, the outside
fuel wouldn't do it, and office fires wouldn't do it, or even those loads wouldn't do it, because those buildings had held those loads for decades.
And it didn't. It basically, of course, they came down perfectly symmetrically. They didn't lean to the right. They didn't lean to the left. In fact, I basically get some pictures that actually show when this collapse started. And the top of the building, I don't know whether it's certainly the south or the north tower, starts to fall off. It's tilting about almost 25 degrees or so. And then suddenly it just all dissolves, so that it simply dissolves down. Why would the top of the building that's tilting 25 degrees suddenly dissolve? And of course, the question.
Right, yeah, because if the building starts to tilt like that, then the momentum would continue the tilt, and it would continue rotating until it crashed into the ground. But as soon as it tilted to a certain extent, and then everything just, all hell broke loose, I could say, and all the parts started flying all over the place. And you can see in the photographs of the Twin Towers, these massive big beams that weigh thousands of tons are not collapsing. They're being shot up into the air. And they have been shot, and some of them went vertically, I think almost 600 feet. And so it takes a massive amount of energy to be able to take those beams and shoot them up into the air and out to the side. So it wasn't just a simple collapse like in Building 7, but that was your classic controlled demolition where it just went straight down into its own footprint.
And you
the,
get
twin, the twin towers were blown up all over the place.
And basically, of course, you can see the Building 7 just go up on type in Google of a collapse of Building 7. It's a typical collapse. You'll see the center of the roof collapse. Well, we've got Dave calling from New York. Dave, do you have a question for our guest?
Yeah, a real quick one. Just wondering if anybody's ever been able to get a hold of the plans of the original structure, or are they kept secret, and for what reason?
Do we know that anybody got hold of the plans of the Twin Towers? I'm sure they were available. Don't you think so, Art?
Yeah, I've seen some of the, I haven't seen all the detailed plans, but I have seen a lot of the plans. I mean, as far as where all the columns and the thickness of the columns and all those kind of things, I know those are out there, but I'm not sure if they've been able to get a hold of all the detailed plans. I don't think they have.
Okay, fine. Thanks very much for calling. We'll be back here in just a moment with Radio Liberty.
Hello, folks. This is Steve Day, the director of Home for Health Lifestyle Center. And over the past years, we have been blessed by witnessing folks plagued by chronic illnesses gain restoration and get back their health after coming through our live-in Christian health retreat. Today, sickness and disease is everywhere. Cancer, MS, diabetes, and chronic diseases plague us. But there is hope, and Home for Health can help. We're here to help you in your time of need, and we would encourage you to go to the Home for Health website, www.homeforhealth.net. That's www.homeforhealth.net. Or you can call us today at 888-642-9644. That's 888-642-9644. Call Home for Health today and start your healing journey now.
Home for Health, truly do all to yourself. Being free of disease is real well. Home for Health.
There is a disturbing trend here in these United States that is progressing unnoticed and without constraint. From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we have seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. Our founding fathers designed our three-part governmental system to have checks and balances upon each other. Each branch of the government has now taken upon itself power that was never intended for it to have. The judicial branch in particular needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. There you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. judicialreformnow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for Prostate Support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
This is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Art Olivier. And certainly, you can get the DVD from him, or you can certainly, we're going to order it tomorrow and try to have it as soon as we can. It is a very important video. Certainly, it is a fictionalized a story of what happened, and yet it's all based upon fact. And they killed those people, ladies and gentlemen. They killed them. They murdered them in cold blood. They knew exactly what they were doing, but they needed an excuse to go to war with Afghanistan. Remember, it was 15 of the 19 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia, and they were funded by Saudi Arabia. And so what do? Go to war with Afghanistan. Isn't that logical? And none of this is logical. We have a four tape set on 911. We have a four tape set on 911 update. We have a four tape set on why do the buildings come down. We'll actually hear my interview with Leo Chavez, Sergeant Leo Chavez. He was certainly at CENTCOM headquarters in Florida on the morning of the attack, and he will tell you that there were all sorts of simulated attacks that morning, and that basically, of course, there were opportunities to interfere, and certainly these were effectively blocked. Leo Chavez disappeared shortly after he was on my program, and to my knowledge, he has not been seen in some years as Sergeant Leo Chavez. This may be one of the last interviews he ever gave on our program. Why do the buildings come down? The other is a two-hour interview with a gentleman who was in charge of cleaning up the debris from building number 7 collapse. He was there the day after, and he says certainly that he's 99% sure that this was a controlled demolition. A controlled demolition, and Building 7 was a controlled demolition, then they murdered those people, ladies and gentlemen. Don't worry about Sydney. It's tragic that they killed 3 people. This isn't the Boston Marathon, but they killed almost 3,000 people, and the murderers are still on the loose. You need to get that information. We have certainly a number of DVDs, but we will be carrying this one as well, but there are a number of other DVDs out there. One of the people who put them out has been sued and harassed. I don't know what's happened to the other ones, but we do have it. Then you get them by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Or certainly, we hope, of course, that you'll go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. You can read many of our newsletters. We actually have, I think, about 5 different little booklets going into the background of what happened with the 911 attack. And basically, you get those by calling our 800 number. And these are simply compilations of newsletters. We did a tremendous amount of research at the time, and finally came to the conclusion they murdered those people, and if they would murder them, they'll murder you and your family as well. We're dealing with organized evil. You need to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. Brotherhood of Darkness. It is one of the finest sources of information that will put together everything in a very readable manner. It has changed many people's lives, and hopefully it's brought many people certainly into a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ, because behind everything going on are powerful forces of organized evil. We are involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. America was originally founded predominantly by Christians and certainly built upon Christian principles. But eventually, of course, very slowly and progressively, the evil people took control. And today they are in total control of both political parties. They can have their people in the military. They control banking. 6 corporations control our banking, and 69% of all the financial assets in the United States are in the hands of those 6 banks, all of which tie into the Brotherhood. They control most of our major corporations. They control our educational system. They control certainly people working within the religious organizations in America. They control the media. They control the great tax-exempt foundations. They control our nation. It's time the American people took this country back, because if we don't take a stand, then I believe God is going to destroy this nation. Because, you see, God who gave us life gave us liberty. But can the liberty of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice will not sleep forever. Those were the words of Thomas Jefferson, but there is truth today is when he spoke them.
As we raise our voices in a solemn prayer, God bless America. And that I love.
stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light from above. From the mountain to the prairie to the ocean white with gold.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Christian civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you of the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of one of my favorite guests and personal friend, William Federer. Hi, William. How are we doing?
Oh, Dr. Stan, great to be with you.
What are we going to be talking about tonight? Now, for those of you who don't know William, he's certainly been working at this for 15, 17 years. I don't know how long. But how long have you been at this, William, trying to get the information out?
Well, my first book came off the press in 1994.
1994. And, so we're talking about certainly about 18 years, something like that, 19 years.
Right. And it is called America's God and Country Encyclopedia Quotations, and we just recently are reprinting it. And so we're probably close to 500,000 copies of that out now. And but one of the things I felt important is to understand the gay agenda. You obviously do, Dr. Stan, but one of the things we see happening is the homosexualizing of the military, the Boy Scouts. The president is the honorary chairman of the Boy Scouts, and from Woodrow Wilson on, FDR, Calvin Coolidge, Richard Nixon, it was more of a photo op. FDR stood there with some of the Eagle Scouts and recited the Scout Oath, morally straight in it. But President Obama is using his position as the honorary president of the Boy Scouts to twist their arms to push the gay agenda. This is not something that is being demanded from the ground up. It is something being enforced from the top down. It will destroy the Boy Scouts. But that's sort of the goal, I'm beginning to believe. Back to the case before the Supreme Court that should come out in a month or two, which will decide whether or not the Defense of Marriage Act will be struck down. And if so, there will be gay marriage all across America. And one of the things we're seeing is that the people pushing the gay agenda are not content with coming out of the closet. They want to push us into it. In other words, gay marriage is not the end of their agenda. It is the beginning. And when it passes in a state like Massachusetts, they don't line up at the Justice of the Peace. They make a beeline to the preschool and begin indoctrinating little children. Now, what they indoctrinate children with is exactly the opposite of every single bit of Christian, Judeo-Christian doctrine and morality that exists. So, for example, there is a commandment, thou shalt not commit adultery. Well, what they're now teaching in these schools is that not only is there not adultery, that they're supposed to experiment. And the traditional Judeo-Christian teaching is that God created you special. They teach that if there is a God, he is so confused, he's put in men and women's bodies. and then Jesus teaches that whosoever causes one of these little ones to stumble, it's better that a millstone be put around their neck and they be thrown in the depths of the sea. Well, guess what? That is exactly what we're going to be allowing, because it's not just experimenting. It's going through the desensitization stage that pedophiles go through before they commit their acts, is they soften the kids up to the idea by showing them pornography. Well, we're going to be doing that in school. And the equivalent of putting a millstone around our necks, if the gospel is true, which I believe it is.
I believe it is true, and I think it's so difficult to believe this is really going on in our schools. All across America, children in kindergarten are being told that homosexuality is perfectly all right. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, if God is just, he's going to bring his judgment on this nation. And where are the churches? Why aren't they speaking out? Why aren't they screaming? Why aren't Christians out demonstrating? Why, of course, because they've infiltrated our churches and neutralized the churches. It's time we took our churches, time I took our nation back. William, you go right ahead.
Well, the gay agenda has an equal sign as their symbol, marriage equality, but really the equal sign means something else, that the gay agenda is equal a war on Christianity. So really, all the gay agenda is a creative way to criminalize Christianity, and we see that they are not content with, as I mentioned, coming out of the closet. They want to bully those groups that don't agree with them. They are hateful. Where we are tolerant of them, they are not tolerant of us. There's a story after story. For example, a Catholic priest in Canada wrote a letter to the editor talking about how marriage between a man and woman is traditional biblical teaching, and he was brought up on hate crime charges. A florist in Washington State did not want to deliver flowers to a gay marriage ceremony or whatever the ceremony was called. And they went after her rather than saying, okay, we're going to get somebody else. They want to intimidate a photographer that doesn't want to photograph a gay ceremony. They want to go after them. And we're naive to think it's going to stop there, that if they get more power, do we really think that they're all of a sudden going to become more tolerant of us? And the big concern comes when we face the military. So the homosexualizing of the military, which for those not familiar, all the way from George Washington on, sodomy was not allowed. George Washington drummed someone out of camp for attempting to commit sodomy. And the military has had a more Judeo-Christian values than the general populace. And we see that Bill Clinton is the one who allowed homosexuals to be in the military, and he just said, don't ask, don't tell. If you don't mention it, and we won't ask, and we'll just sort of let it happen. Well, Harry Reid and a lame duck Congress, in other words, the Congress and Senate had been voted out of their position. But a lame duck Congress voted to homosexualize the military. And what we're seeing, we got our first homosexual general. Recently I talked with people that work with chaplains. And they said that, someone from the Obama administration came in, had briefed all the chaplains, told them that they were going to have to perform gay marriages. And the chaplain said, well, gee, the denominations that have ordained us, they do not acknowledge gay marriage, and we will be losing our ordination if we do this. And they said, tough.
Hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be back in a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is William Federer, and he's simply pointing out that basically, of course, the Christians certainly have basically said, well, if homosexuals want to come out of the closet, why they can come out of the closet, but that's not really what they want. They don't want to simply be accepted. They want to actually control us, and they want to criminalize Christianity. If Christians speak out against homosexuality, and certainly if you oppose homosexuality at all publicly, you will be attacked and vilified, and they will do all sorts of things of harassing you. And just, I know one time I was certainly targeted by the homosexuals. I had literally hundreds of hate calls, and I called the police, and they just said, sorry, you know, if you were to call them and certainly terrorize them and harass them, that would be a crime. If they do that to you, why, that's just your tough luck. You have no protection. And basically, they're doing this in the military. Are they homosexualizing our military? Certainly, Army chaplains are not allowed to speak out against homosexuality. Army chaplains are required to marry same-sex couples. We have our first certainly openly homosexual general. And ladies and gentlemen, there is nothing that will be more effective in destroying the moral fabric of the American military than homosexualizing this. Basically, of course, another thing is our military leaders are no longer allowed to lead the troops in prayer. Our military leaders are no longer allowed to lead our troops in prayer. And you must understand, ladies and gentlemen, there's a conspiracy against Christianity. When you understand that this is not happening by accident, the homosexuals are simply being used in this, and eventually they will be destroyed, but you and I and America and this wonderful dream of the was America will soon become simply a remembrance of things past unless the churches are willing to stand up and point out that this is an organized effort to undermine Christianity. And if people want to be a homosexual, that's fine. But certainly they do not have the right to keep people from being critical and pointing out what the scriptures say. And when they begin to suppress the truths of the scriptures, not only certainly in our schools, but in certainly in the military, it won't be very long before they'll begin to suppress it in our churches as well. And we're in real trouble. William, go right ahead with your story.
So there's the question, what do we have to expect once the Judeo-Christian conscience has been removed from the military? Well, in reading through history, I found a story that was from 285 AD. So this is way back during the Roman Empire period of time. And there were 10 major persecutions of Christians during this three-century period. And the worst was the last. It was during a emperor named Diocletian. Now, Diocletian took office as the emperor in 285 AD, and he lost some battles with Persia. And he asked his generals why. And his generals said, well, you've neglected the Roman gods. So Diocletian orders all his military to worship the Roman gods. Well, it had been about 25 years since the last persecution of Christians, and so there were a lot of Christians in the military, a lot of soldiers that converted to Christianity, but they could not worship the Roman gods, and so they were forced out of the military. Again, once the Christian conscience was out of the military, Diocletian used the military to force all of Rome to return to worshiping the Roman gods, and he went systematically, province by province, tearing down churches, burning them, scriptures, boiling them alive, cutting out the tongues, killing them, and it went on for 30 years. It was not until Constantine became the emperor that Christians finally got relief. But this situation of the de-Christianizing of our military with the homosexual movement and with recruiting, I've talked to people overseas that they say that there are American Army recruiting stations saying, we'll offer you immediate citizenship if you become a soldier in the U.S. Army. And so there are Muslims signing up all over to immediately become U.S. citizens, and they're sworn in and given guns and training. And so there's this de-Christianizing going on. Now, do we really think that the same intolerant people that won't allow a coach to bow his head on the sidelines while the students have a voluntary prayer? Do we really think that the same intolerant people that get offended by a cross in the middle of the desert, or the same intolerant people that won't allow a valedictorian to mention Jesus in their valedictorian address, do we really think that once they get a hold of the gun, that somehow they're going to become more tolerant than they are now? I think that we can expect persecution. Now, we have some recent examples of governments that did not have Judeo-Christian morality in their military and in their governments. What did they do? Well, we have Mao Zedong in China in the 1950s, killed 80 million of his own people. We had Pol Pot in Cambodia in the 1970s. Kill a third of the country, 2 or 3 million people in killing fields. Stalin killed at least 20 million Ukrainians, and all the Soviet purges killed an estimated 60 million of their own people. And you had Castro in Cuba and Ho Chi Minh in Vietnam, and 45 countries fell to communism. Horrible, horrible things can happen when a government stops believing that you are made in the image of God. And that the we have the French Revolution, where they had a whole generation of Voltaire, with his brilliant wit, mocking Christianity. That's what Norman Lear said to the Saturday Night Live writers: make people laugh at what they hold sacred, and if you laugh at it, you'll respect it less, and you'll detach your affections from it, and then you get to neutral, and then you end up going in reverse. Well, anyway, Voltaire in France mocked Christianity, and then they ended up having a couple bad years of crop failure, and the people thought if they could just chop off King Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette's head, then their problems will be solved. Well, they chop off the heads, and their problems are not solved. And then the people say, well, if we can just chop off all the royalty's heads, then our problems will be solved. Well, they chop them off, their problems aren't solved. Then the people say, well, if we can just chop off all the rich people's heads, we don't have money, they have money, they brought them into the streets of Paris, chopped off their heads, their situation still didn't turn around. And then they thought, well, it's all the business owners and farmers, and they have the food and the supplies, and they're not giving it to us, and those people hoarding food in their basement and garage, right? We don't have food, they do. They're the problem. They brought them into the streets of Paris, chopped off their heads. Their situation still didn't turn around. And then they said it's the clergy, the people speaking out against this government takeover and all the chopping offs of heads, and they're brought into the streets of Paris and have their heads chopped off. And then it's those that used to chop off heads but got tired of it. Somehow they were holding them back from their new utopia, and they brought them into the streets of Paris, chopped their heads off. Their situation still didn't turn around, so they were taken over by a dictator named Napoleon. And so we see that this terror, they estimate 40,000 people had their heads chopped off by this atheistic movement in France. 300,000 were killed in the Vendée, which was the northwest area of France, where they went in and butchered men, women, and children. It was a very Catholic area. Napoleon said he was sick, and so he was not able to participate in that. But nevertheless, they specifically wanted to de-Christianize their country. In France, when they did their French Revolution, 1793, when they came up with their constitution, they did not want to have it done in the year of the Lord, like our constitution. So they made 1793 the new year one. They didn't want a Sabbath rest at a 7-day week, so they came up with a 10-day week and a 10-month year, and they said 10 was the number of man, 10 fingers, 10 toes, and so they came up with the metric system, everything divisible by 10. Maybe that's why I've never really liked the metric system. And then they renamed the months. They brought a prostitute into Notre Dame Cathedral, covered her with a sheet, said this is the goddess of reason, let's worship her. And so the symbol of a woman with a cloth draping off her was this symbol, of France and their revolution. And anyway, a horrible bloodbath that took place by an atheistic government that wanted to distance itself from its Judeo-Christian past. And then, of course, Napoleon spreads this French secularism all around Europe. And then once Europe becomes secular, they say, well, bring in anything you want. And all these new beliefs come in, and now Sharia law, Islam's coming in and slamming the car into reverse, so to speak. But, again, the situation is the homosexualizing of the military. Will there be a fallout? What do we have to expect? We can expect a less of a Christian conscience and the same intolerant people that are trying to destroy the Boy Scouts. They're not all of a sudden going to become more tolerant once they control the gun. We could go even more in that direction. But it's important for us to realize that there is a price to pay. There are consequences for allowing ourselves to be de-Christianized. I've had spent years studying world government and found out that the most common form of government is the dictatorship. Of course, they go by different names. pharaohs, caesars, kaisers, sultans, and czars. But your worth is dependent on your ability to contribute to the state and the dictator. The idea that you're made in the image of God, which is the Bible, book of Genesis, that's revolutionary. And that says you're equal, not because you can contribute to the state or you're a Muslim male. If you're equal because you're made in the image of God. Once we get away from God, the Judeo-Christian God, you don't have any other worth than what the government says. And if you stand in the government's way, you can expect retribution.
And basically, ladies and gentlemen, there is really an organized effort to destroy Christianity in this country, and it isn't all the homosexuals. They're very powerful people working at the behind the scenes using homosexuality, but they want to destroy the Christian foundation of our country. They're doing a great job of it, and nobody points it out. William, go right ahead.
I also wanted to mention the Boston bomber, and there's two levels to this. One is the Islamic jihad that has been going on for 1,400 years, and it is important for us to realize that this was not a somebody on the right that they wanted to blame this on. This was somebody that had this fundamental Islamic mentality. I've mentioned it on your program before, but in the chance that maybe someone's listening to this to me for the first time, I wrote a book on Islam, and Muhammad was the perfect Muslim. And so today, Muslims that want to be better Muslims, they want to be like Muhammad. And so if we understand Muhammad's life, we get an insight into those who are wanting to follow his life. And so Muhammad was a religious leader for 12 years in the pagan city of Mecca from 610 AD to 622 AD. He only made 70 converts in 12 years. And he gets a little more aggressive in his presentation by hanging around the Kaaba, which is the square building in Mecca that housed 360 different pagan gods. And so Muhammad begins to tell these pagans while they're in their act of worshiping their pagan gods, that they're going to burn in hell, and all their ancestors are burning in hell. And these pagans, who were really tolerant and allowed Muhammad to be there with his new religion, they considered him as disturbing the peace, and so they decided to chase him out of town in the year 622 AD. So Muhammad begins this victimhood concept, that he's the victim because he was not tolerated, and they chased him out of town. And so he used that. And he went to the city 210 miles to the north called Medina. And he goes in, presents his Jewish faith to the his Islamic faith to the Jews, and they reject him. So Muhammad goes into the minority pagan neighborhood in Medina, begins to make some converts. A few pagan leaders resisted, and they mysteriously got assassinated. And the rest of the pagans decided that they would join Muhammad. And so Muhammad has a following. For a way of trying to use something people are familiar with. It was sort of like a community organizer. Here he is amongst the minority neighborhoods in a Jewish-controlled city, and he gets them behind him, and he goes to the Jews, and he presents himself as a new kind of politician, that since he is new to the city of Medina, he can rise above the tribal partisanships that they've had for centuries. And so the Jews decide to make a treaty with Muhammad, and so now he is a political leader as well as a religious leader. Then the third step, his followers in Mecca get a little argumentative and threatening, the way some of his followers are today. They get chased out of Mecca for disturbing the peace. They go north to Medina, and Muhammad permits them to rob the caravans headed to Mecca in retaliation for the Meccans chasing them out of town. And so where Jesus said, if they take your coat, give them your shirt, Muhammad said, if they take your house, you take their caravan. And so he has a whole chapter of the Quran revealed to him from his Allah on how to distribute booty from robbing caravans. It's Surah 8, Chapter 8. And so in the year 624 AD, the Meccans send 1,000 soldiers to escort and protect their caravan. And Muhammad, with 300 warriors, defeats 1,000. And so Muhammad takes...
Hold that thought, and we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William is simply giving us the background of Muhammad's rise to prominence. And initially, he was in Mecca, and the people there didn't like him, and they threw him out. He went to Medina, and of course, this was a Jewish city. The Jews were very tolerant of him, and actually signed an agreement with him, and he was perfectly free to go ahead and push his religion there, his new Islamic religion. And basically, of course, many of the people who were followers of Muhammad, certainly in Mecca, left Mecca, and they were raiding the caravans going to Mecca, and of course, with the full help and support of Muhammad. And so the Meccans put off with an army of 1,000 to take down these people who were actually raiding the caravans. And Muhammad, with an army of 300, defeats the army of 1,000, and this is almost unheard of, almost as if there was some supernatural force behind Muhammad, and now suddenly he is pushed into a position of prominence. Go right ahead, William.
And so it was the Battle of Badra, B-A-D-R, Badra, in the year 624 A.D. And in my book, the title of my book is What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam in the United States. And, of course, AmericanMinute.com is my website. But I recently re-edited it and added more stuff to it. And believe it or not, Washington Irving, he was the U.S. ambassador to Spain. And he wrote one of the first biographies of Muhammad. And he talks about this period in Muhammad's life and how at first he endeavored to mix a little Jewish faith and Christian faith and some others and, you know, try to be a little tolerant. And he says, but when he came to Medina and the Meccans that had been chased out of Mecca came to him with their swords and their pagans and they're willing to fight. And Washington Irving says that Muhammad could not resist the situation, and he yielded to nature of humankind, and he left trying to imitate Jesus, and he basically talks about him basically becoming a gang leader, and that he decided to get involved in warfare. And lo and behold, Muhammad was a brilliant warrior. Why? Well, he was creative, unconventional. In other words, he didn't play by the rules. And so, for example, these Arab pagans had a month off every year where they agreed not to fight. Gentlemen's agreements been going on for centuries. And these pagans would go on pilgrimage to Mecca, to that square building, and they would worship their pagan gods. And well, Muhammad gets verses from his Allah telling him that it's okay to rob these caravans during this Ramadan month. And he catches thousands of them by surprise and robs and steals from their caravans. Well, the Meccans decide in the year 627 A.D., that they're going to send 10,000 soldiers to Medina to stop Muhammad once and for all from robbing their caravan. And they have camels and horses and cavalry. And Muhammad's version of roadside bombs and IEDs was he dug potholes and trenches all around the city of Medina. And when the cavalry charged, they couldn't charge because it would break their legs. You can't charge your horse and camel across a field full of potholes and trenches while you're being shot at from the walls. And so they basically have to call off the attack, and they're camped there waiting to decide what to do. And Muhammad goes to some of the tents of the allies, and he bribes them, and they suddenly slip away in the night. And he goes to some of the other tents of the allies and that were with the Meccans and threatens them, and they slip away in the night, sort of the Chicago politics, the bribe or the bullet. And then it gets freezing cold for a week, and the Meccans lose heart and decide to retreat and bring their troops home. And when the Meccans bring their troops home, instead of Muhammad becoming peaceful, instead he's emboldened that his enemies were cowards and they showed weakness and they retreated. And so Muhammad goes back into the city of Medina. And remember those three Jewish tribes that led him into the city as a refugee 5 years earlier. He gets offended at one of the tribes, confiscates their property, and chases them out of town. Gets offended at another tribe, confiscates their property, takes them out of town. And then the third one, and by the way, this set a precedent in Islam called hudna, which means when you're weak, you make treaties until you get strong enough to disregard them. So when he first came to Medina, he was weak, and that's when he did that community organizing and made a treaty. Now it's 5 years later, he's in a position of strength, and he breaks the treaties and chases them out of town. But the third Jewish tribe, I'll tell you about as we come back from the break here.
All right, fine. But there's so much in the history of the Muslim faith that we don't know about or not being taught about, but because it's entirely different than the Christian faith. And very, very tragically, the Pope has recently come out and said, we all worship the same God, Christians and Muslims, certainly. We all worship the same God. We do not worship the same. We do not worship the same God. We'll be back in just a moment here with our special guest, William Federer. William, you go right ahead.
Well, we're talking about the Muhammad, and he had just chased away the Meccans, and so the Jews in Medina have no one to come to their rescue. He chases out two of the tribes, confiscates their property. Again, it's called Hudna in Islam. It means when you're weak, you make treaties until you get strong enough to disregard them. So we're twisting Israel's arm to make a treaty with the surrounding Muslim countries. Their concept of treaty is simply a strategic period where you restock missiles. There's no concept of a permanent peace. The permanence is you want the whole world to submit to Allah. Anyway, the third Jewish tribe in Medina, Muhammad bottles them in their neighborhood for 25 days. When they finally surrender, he brings them out into the market and chops off their heads, 600 or 700 of them, and then he sells the women and children into slavery. And he did keep one of the wives for himself, Rehana. He ended up having anywhere from 11 to 22 wives. He had slave wives and concubines and so forth. And then the remaining he sold into slavery, and this started the slavery period of Islam. And so in the next 1,400 years, they enslaved over 180 million Africans, castrate the men, make them eunuchs. Unfortunately, there's more slavery today than any other time in world history, and a lot of it is in Muslim countries, Niger, Mauritania, Sudan, and so forth, the sex trafficking they do. Anyway, they enslave over a million Europeans. Spain, Portugal, they take thousands down to North Africa. They raided Ireland. In 1630 and carried away an entire village, the stolen village of Baltimore, Ireland. Only two ever made it back. They captured 400 from Reykjavik, Iceland, took them to Morocco, sold them into slavery in around 1635. They captured one of the pilgrim ships in 1625, 5 years after the pilgrims came to America, and Squanto and the first Thanksgiving and the turkey and everything. The pilgrims save up 800 pounds of beaver skins to send back to Europe to trade. And
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, William is simply pointing out that the history of the Muslim faith basically centers around slavery, and they were the major force in creating slavery. And basically, they're the major force in slavery in the world today. And there's slavery in the Sudan and in many Muslim countries. You're never going to hear about it in the controlled media here in the United States. There is slavery in Saudi Arabia today. Oh, this doesn't exist. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you're not getting the truth. You're not getting the truth, the fact that the Muslims never negotiate in good faith. They will negotiate with you when they're in a position of weakness, and then when they're in a position of strength, they will betray that, and certainly because, of course, their God is not a God of righteousness, as is the Christian God, and basically they're entirely different gods, and yet the Pope Pope Francis recently said, we all worship the same God. Check this out on the internet. Pope Francis said, we all worship the same God. The Muslims and the Christians worship the same God. Well, maybe he worships the God of certainly the same God that the Muslims do, but I don't, and I don't think that most Catholics or most Protestants do. Why would a man with two PhDs make a statement like that unless they're trying to create a one-world religion and undermine the very tenets of Christianity? Go right ahead, William.
Well, and I just saw an email. I have not verified it, but the email said that Rick Warren said this similar thing, trying to say that Islam and Christians worship the same God. In a little comparison that I did in my book, I compared Jesus and Muhammad. And Jesus never killed anybody. Muhammad killed an estimated 3,000 people, including cutting off the heads of those 700 Jews in Medina. Jesus never owned slaves. Muhammad got a fifth of the slaves taken in battle. He even had African slaves because he was a white Arab. The Hadith say when Muhammad prayed, you could see the whiteness of his armpits when he lifted his arm. Another Hadith says a guy was riding in a donkey with the prophet to the early morning prayer, and his leg rubbed up against the prophet's thigh, and he saw the whiteness of the prophet's thigh, and many hadiths like that. Anyway, Muhammad owned slaves. Jesus never tortured anybody. Muhammad, when he conquered Kaibar, the last Jewish settlement in Arabia, the chief would not tell where the tribe's treasure was hidden. Muhammad had the poor guy stretched out on the ground, and they kindled a fire on his chest. He still wouldn't tell, so Muhammad had him beheaded and then took his pretty 20-year-old wife, Safiana, and slept with her that night. Jesus never lied, and he said that Satan's the father of liars, and it says that, you know, in the book of Revelation, that no liar will enter into, you know, the New Jerusalem and so forth. Muhammad permitted lying. It's called taqiyya, sacred lying, holy deceit, that you're obligated to lie if the goal is obligatory, to spread Islam. So, for example, Muhammad had a warrior who was captured, and he was forced to renounce Muhammad. He later escaped and went back to Muhammad, and Muhammad forgave him. And Muhammad said, if they make you turn, turn, but don't turn in your heart. In other words, it's okay to deny Muhammad in a pinch to save your skin as long as you don't fight against Islam. In other words, it's okay to say you're not a Muslim in order to get elected, but then everything you do once you're elected is to help advance Islam. Anyway, Jesus never forced anyone to follow him. He said something difficult. Many disciples walked with him no more. Muhammad said, whoever changes his Islamic religion, kill him. Jesus forgave insults, dying on the cross, saying, Father, forgive him. Muhammad avenged insults. There was a guy named Ibn Khattal who made up poems making fun of Muhammad, and his two slave girls recited the poems, and Muhammad was insulted by the poems, so he ordered them murdered. Jesus did not permit his apostles to rape anyone. Duh. Muhammad did. And there's all these hadiths that talk about how to do it because the guys were stopping short of getting them pregnant because they could sell the women for more in the slave market if they were not pregnant, so on and so forth. None of the apostles were governors or generals. Every one of the caliphs, a caliph is the supreme leader in Islam, every one of the caliphs was a military leader. The first three centuries of Christianity, there were 10 major persecutions. Christians were thrown to the lions. They never led an armed resistance against the Roman emperor. The first three centuries of Islam, they conquered from Arabia to Paris. Jesus taught that God was our father. In Islam, it's blasphemy to call Allah your father. Jesus taught we're children of God. In Islam, it's blasphemy to say you're a child of Allah. Jesus taught we're in the image of God. In Islam, Allah has no image. And so it's basically a complete opposite. And to make it clear, the largest religion in the world is Christianity. 33% of the world identifies itself as Christian. 80,000 people convert to Christianity every day. Most of it's in Africa, Asia, the Middle East, and China. Also, 500 people are martyred for Christianity every day. Most of it's in Africa, the Middle East, Asia, and China. In other words, where the persecution is the greatest is where the revival is the greatest. Christianity is dying in Europe and barely holding its own in America. But Christianity is the largest religion in the world. The second largest is Islam, 22% of the world. And then you have, after that, Buddhism, then Hinduism, and then it just goes down to fractions and so forth. But if we're going to look at the other major religions, Buddhism, Hinduism, and so forth, they began before Christ. Islam is the only major world religion that was formed after Christ. And so the other ones don't mention Christianity. They don't mention Jesus because they were started before Christ. Islam specifically mentions Christ, and they have a sin called shirk, S-H-I-R-K, shirk, and it's an unforgivable sin. And in Islam, if you believe that Jesus is the Christ, you have committed the unforgivable sin called shirk. So here we have, if we're all worshiping the same God, how can the Christian doctrine say you have to believe in Jesus to go to heaven, and the Islamic doctrine says if you believe in Jesus, you're condemned to hell? How can the same God say if you believe in Jesus, you go up, and if you believe in Jesus, you go down? Either God is totally schizophrenic, or we are talking about two different gods. And but back to the situation with Muhammad. He went from a religious leader to a political leader to a military leader. And he may have already mentioned, but he was attacking Al-Taif, a city, with catapults and shooting huge rocks in there and smashing into houses. And they were told him that the catapults were killing women and children, innocent bystanders. And his response was, they are among them. So they got to be killed too. So suicide bombers today and Boston bombers today say it's okay to kill innocent people to advance Islam because Muhammad did. And since he is the perfect Muslim, Muslims today that want to be better Muslims or more devout Muslims that are willing to be like Muhammad religiously, politically, and militarily. And so there's 1,400 years of Islamic expansion. Within 100 years of his death, Muslims conquer Syria. Syria was the first country to completely be Christian, evangelized by Paul, and Antioch, Syria, was where the name Christian was first used. Muslims conquered Jerusalem, which had been a Christian city since Constantine. Muslims conquered Egypt, which had been evangelized by Mark, that wrote the Gospel, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. And so Egypt was Coptic Christian until the Muslims invaded. And there used to be 250 Catholic dioceses along North Africa in the 7th century, and they were all conquered by the Muslims. Then the Muslims invaded Spain in the year 711. Then they crossed the Pyrenees Mountains, and they were finally stopped just outside of Paris at the Battle of Tours in 732 A.D., exactly 100 years after the death of Muhammad in 632 A.D. It was from the 10th of Arabia to Paris, it was a military campaign. So all of the rightly guided caliphs, that's what they called them, and Muhammad, they were religious leaders, political leaders, and military leaders. And so today, we come up with this concept called separation of church and state that says, oh, your religion's over here, and your life is on the other side, and the two don't mix. Not so in Islam. It is one, religious, political, military, and there's no way to split them apart, because who has the authority to split Muhammad and say we're only going to imitate the first part of his life, not the second? Now, there have been some brave Muslims who want to reform their faith and say, yes, we acknowledge there was violence at the beginning, but let's just say that was for that period of time and we're not supposed to continue it. And I applaud them. The problem is that they're not getting media attention. They're not getting our government attention. Our government is backing the Muslim Brotherhood. Our government is siding with the violent ones.
And I think that should be repeated over and over again. I mean, who was it who toppled Egypt and the secular government there and installed the current government under Morsi, which is Muslim Brotherhood? The United States. The CIA does this. Of course, they're not going to tell the American people. They did it in Tunisia. They're doing it in Libya. They're in the process of doing it in Syria. Why are we installing all these radical Islamists? I think we're creating the best enemy money could buy. And until you understand that the CIA is funded, certainly the Muslim Brotherhood, going back to the beginning of, pardon me, to the end of the Second World War, covered in a book we carry called The Devil's Game. the devil's game. And ladies and gentlemen, that's just what it is. William, before we go on, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your ministry and get your books.
Well, thank you, Dr. Stan. My website is AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com. And some of the books that I mentioned tonight are What Every American Needs to Know About the Quran, A History of Islam in the United States. I also have a DVD called Islamic Conquest, Past and Present, another DVD called Political Islam's War in the West, and then another book called Change to Chains, and it's a 6,000-year quest for global control. And that sort of segues into combining the different topics that we're talking about tonight. When I began to talk about the Boston Bomber, I said there's two levels deep. The first level is the 1,400-year war that Islam has had with the rest of the world. But the second level is the concept of needing a crisis to consolidate control. And the Boston Bombers, the different crises that happened, they're seemingly excuses for the government to take more control. Now, a little background on this philosophy. In my book, I talk about how the most common form of government in all of world history is dictators, pharaohs, Caesars, Kaisers, Sultans, Tsars, Maharajas, Genghis Khan, Julius Caesars, King Kamehamehas, Montezumas, that the norm, pick any century, the norm is power in the hands of one person. And if you're friends with this person, you're more equal. If you're not friends with this person, you're less equal. And if you're an enemy of this person, you're dead. It's called treason. What's rare in history is people ruling themselves without a king, Israel under the judges, but then the rubber band snaps back. They get King Saul. Athens had a democracy until the rubber band snaps back and Alexander the Great's dead, conquers him. Rome was a republic until the rubber band snaps back and Caesar makes himself dictator for life. All these attempts over again. Now, there's a whole nother set of philosophers that talk about how you take the separated power and reconcentrate it. And Machiavelli, Hegel, Solinsky, Karl Marx. One guy lived in Rome, and his name was Crassus. Crassus. He was the richest guy in Rome. How did he get so rich? Well, he had a fire brigade. You think, well, that's nice. He had a fire brigade. Well, it's a little different than what you're thinking. He had these young men that when they would see a fire, they'd run up with buckets full of water and stand there and watch the house burn. And then Crassus would come up and for pennies on the dollar buy the mansion. And the longer you waited to negotiate, the more it burnt and the less you would offer. And but the history books point to the fact that more often than not, Crassus's men set the fires. So here's this idea that you set the fire, you create the crises, and then you run up with the buckets of water saying, we're here to help. And so it's, lots of philosophers, Sun Tzu in China talks about this, but Machiavelli. And now Machiavelli lived 500 years ago in Italy. And Italy was not Italy 500 years ago. It was a bunch of city-states. Venice, Genoa, Naples, and Florence. Now they weren't democratic republics that we have, but they weren't dictators. They were noblemen's republics. And so the young men who were part of the families that helped found the different republics would sort of, be the rulers. And but anyway, Machiavelli thought, Genoa is always fighting Venice, and who's always fighting Siena, and then there's the Papal States. And Machiavelli thought, if one prince could control all of Italy, it would stop this infighting. And so he wrote a book called The Prince, where the end justifies the means. The end of one prince controlling all of Italy is such a good end. Any means necessary to get there is justified. Lie, cheat, steal, whatever. And so a scenario. The prince wants to conquer a city. The city doesn't want to be conquered. They'd hate him. But if the prince pays some criminals to kill cows, burn barns, and create crisis and terror, the people would cry out for help. The prince would come in and kill the very criminals that he bribed to do it. Nobody would know the better for it, and they would praise the prince as a hero. It's good marketing. You create the need and fill it. You go around the back of the house and set it on fire, and then you go around the front of the house and sell them a fire extinguisher, and they'll pay anything for it, and thank you for being there. So this is this idea that you want there to be some criminals, some people that will execute a crisis, and then you can gather them up and kill them afterwards so they can't snitch on you. And then you come in and take the power, and everybody thanks you for taking the power. Now, that inspired someone named Hegel. Now, Hegel lived in Germany in the early 1800s, and he came up with this theory called dialectics. Now, it's not a diet method. It's a triangle. One corner is a thesis. The opposite corner is an antithesis or antithesis, and the top corner is a synthesis. And it sounds complicated, but it's not. You start off with a thesis, you create the antithesis, and then people settle for the synthesis. So it's the idea that you create a problem that's real bad, and everybody's happy to settle for your answer that's half as bad. And we've seen this with gas prices, right? When the president took over, it was $1.83 a gallon. It goes up to $5, we're happy to pay $3.50, right? And so you create the crisis that's real bad, and everybody's relieved to pay only, you know, what half is that. Well, this dialectic process inspired Karl Marx. And so Karl Marx says, okay, you want to take over a country? You have to create an antithesis. You have to create a crisis. How do you do it? You send labor organizers and community organizers into the countries to create the crises, to set the house on fire, to cause bloodshed. And then when there's enough crises, and killing, everybody's happy to have somebody restore order, at least to stop the killing.
And that's, of course, exactly what's going on in America today as we see this threat of terrorism and, of course, the attacks in Boston and the other terrorist attacks. And we know it's real because we have all these people there at the airports, you know, checking us to make sure we're not terrorists. Ladies and gentlemen, this whole thing is as phony as a $3 bill. Our borders are wide open. They could come in and they could have all sorts of attackers, but they don't. Why is it we've had so few attacks in the last 11 years? Because the war on terrorism is entirely contrived. Create a problem, and then, of course, give up the freedom to protect us. William, we've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, the Karl Marx, his idea was you organize the poor against the rich, that it works best if they're not Christian. Napoleon said that religion keeps the poor from murdering the rich. So if you can get rid of religion, then you just got plain people that are motivated by their lust. And you say, okay, you want what they have, follow me, you'll get it. And so whether he's organizing the blacks against the whites or the Catholics against the Protestants or the Hutus against the Tutsis in the Congo, it doesn't matter who the two sides are. They just want the crises. And once it's destabilized, then they take order. Well, that inspired Saul Alinsky. He apprenticed by riding around with Al Capone's hitmen in Chicago. Saul Alinsky saw how all you'd have to do is smash a few windows and kill a few people, and everybody on that block would pay protection money. And so he applies this to politics. He says you got to create the crises. And so Saul Alinsky says a community organizer's job is to rub raw the resentments of the community, fan the flames of hostility to the point of overt expression, to create the crises and controversy rather than avoid it, because unless there's controversy, the people are not motivated enough to act. And so Hillary Clinton did her master's thesis on Saul Alinsky, and our president taught Saul Alinsky's classes, and he was a community organizer in Chicago. He is a master at this, where if there's something in the news, you want to fan it, make it big, you want there to be a crisis, and if there's not one, you want to create one. And the result is that you get more power. So it's a lot of C's. You create or capitalize on a crisis to consolidate control. Create or capitalize on a crisis to consolidate control. And so there is a lot of evidence that whether a crisis is coincidental or conspired, the consequence is the concentrating of control. So they can plan some, and other ones can just be a natural one, whether it's a hurricane or something. But their answer is always the same. Surrender your freedoms to the government. But a lot of, Ronald Reagan said it pretty succinctly. He said, the government that's big enough to give you everything you want is big enough to take away everything you have. It's this idea that Ben Franklin, whoever trades freedom for security, will get neither. And so they're going to come and say, well, you need security. You need to give up your guns for security. You need this for security. Well, no, you give up your freedom for security, you're not going to have freedom and you're not going to have security. It's going to be a totalitarian dictatorship. We're going to be back at the beginning. You might as well have a Nimrod and a Tower of Babel. You're going to have, you know, power concentrating into the one hands of one person. And but anyway, AmericanMinute.com.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, and William Federer, and certainly if you haven't got his material, you need to have it. William is one of the clearest thinking individuals in our country. William, one more time, get your address out so people know how to get in touch with you.
Oh, thanks, Dr. Stan. It's AmericanMinute.com. I send out a free daily email called The American Minute, something happened on each date in our history. And I talked about the book Change to Chains, The 6,000-Year Quest for Global Control. And then what every American needs to know about the Quran, the history of Islam in the United States.
God bless you. Thanks for everything. And we'll be talking to you on all of our other programs very, very soon.
Thank you, Dr. Stan.
Good night. God bless. Okay. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoy William Federer. If you certainly, if we talk during the breaks, and you really need to get a DVD, a CD of this program. If you'd like one, just call us at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Now, we carry a number of William's books. You can always call our number at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Ask for William Federer's books because we think they are very, very important. Well, this is the time when I need to remind you that you can't understand anything going on today unless you understand my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, which will take you into the secret societies. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, there really are secret and covert organizations. Now, you can check them out on the Internet. You'll never or hardly ever see them mentioned in the major media because the mainline media is controlled. If you want to verify that, you need to get the book, The New Media Monopoly. The New Media Monopoly, available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You need to get my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. That's Brotherhood of Darkness. To understand certainly how we funded the Nazis, both before and during World War II, you need to get certainly the four CD set we have called The War Against the Jews. It's my interviews with certainly John Loftus, who had a security clearance three levels above top secret, and he was able to record so much of the information. Of course, it was suppressed for many years. It wasn't until, I think, about a year ago when the statute of limitations was up, he was able to bring out the truth about what he learned about how certainly very powerful people in America financed the Nazi movement both before and during World War II, while, of course, the Nazis were killing American boys. And so the American corporations built the weapons and the trucks and the tanks. Ford and General Motors, they were all over there building the weapons for the Nazis so we could have a war just the same way today. We are funding the Muslim Brotherhood. That's covered in a book called The Devil's Game. The Devil's Game. Why, of course, we're funding the Muslim Brotherhood. We're toppling the secular countries over in the Near East, the Middle East, Egypt, Tunisia, Libya. We've already toppled Turkey and brought them under the control of the Muslim Brotherhood. Lebanon, which we're in the process of toppling the government, certainly in Syria. And it won't be long before Yemen, Dubai, Jordan are all gone. Uniting them together under the radical Islamic rule in preparation for the coming great war. And ladies and gentlemen, if you don't have an enemy, how can you have a war? When you understand that, so much of what goes on makes sense. And that's what we did with World War I. That's what we did with the Spanish-American War. They were all contrived. The attack on Afghanistan was justified because, of course, the attack on America on September 11th, when 15 Saudi Arabian citizens funded by Saudi Arabia, 15 of the 19 hijackers came from Saudi Arabia, and the Christians were told that they took down the Twin Towers and it's Building 7, and they attacked the Pentagon, and so we go to war with Afghanistan. Well, ladies and gentlemen, nothing as you certainly believe it was. You need to get our information. RadioLiberty.com has. We have all sorts of DVDs. We have certainly a number of pamphlets on 9/11 available by calling 1-800-544-8927, DVDs. And we're going to be carrying that DVD on Operation Terror. You can order it, 1-800-544-8927. And we don't know the cost. It'll either be $19.95 or $24.95, but please pray for Radio Liberty.
Let us all be grateful for a land so fair as we raise our voices in a solemn prayer. God bless America.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. It is 29 April 2013. It is Monday. Welcome back to Power Hour. Hope you had a wonderful weekend. Hope you had a beautiful weekend. It was nice. At least for us here. I hope it was for you also. It was beautiful. Planting a little bit, playing outside, going for a walk, doing the things that really life is all about. Not just trying to worry about what's the next impending crisis in this country. And, of course, finally, the information on Boston massacre bombing is starting to dry up just a little bit. Moving on to other things, finally, thank goodness. But I'm going to tell you a little bit later, do you know how many people they say now were injured in that Boston massacre bombing? Have you heard the story about the prosthetic legs that fell off? A lot of people looking at this story, like all the other stories that we keep reviewing. And speaking of reviewing stories, reviewing history is what we're going to be doing today. And we have two powerful guests for you today to review those stories of history, to find out what is a story and what is real. Joining us at 8 o'clock will be former detective.